I think we'll just stand easy here for a couple minutes until we hit the 2 o'clock hour so we can be ready for our quorum. I wouldn't say you probably have time to run off or like get too far down the hall, but we'll just get ready to go here at 2 o'clock for the open forum. Call us back to order. It is 2 o'clock and now is the time that we can put aside for our public forum and our any other public comments at 2 o'clock. Our staff attorney, John Kotelnik, has been gracious enough since COVID to continue to handle the moderation of that. He's doing such a great job. I'm going to let him continue to do that. So, John, if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and take over for the public comment section.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Kotelnik, staff attorney. Thank you for the privilege of conducting an open forum hearing. Just as a point of clarification, so there is no actual public hearing. But as a legal requirement, because there's no finalizations. So the only portion of the meeting that we really have as far as for public comments is what we call is the open forum. So the first person I have signed up for the open forum is Ms. Nancy Hilding. Ms. Hilding, are you on the line? And as a reminder, as we're looking for Ms. Hilding, please limit your testimony to 3 minutes out of consideration of multiple people wishing to give public input, as well as the other items that are left on the agenda. So with that, Ms. Hilding, are you there?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear me? I just want to say something. Julie Anderson called me and she's been trying to get on by Zoom and it's not working and she's trying to get on by telephone and she keeps getting mooted. So there is another person trying to join having difficulties, okay? All right, so I'm going to start my speech here, and I want to actually show you some screenshots here. I'm speaking for Prairie Hills Audubon. Can you see me? Am I seen?
I see you the top of your head.
You have to move your camera down to your ceiling.
There you go.
This should be dead on arrival kind of petition. The 2019 Mountain Lion Plan manages for sustainable population with population goals of 200 to 300 lions. I think that's sub-adults and adults. I'm showing you a chart here that one of the Andes showed at the commission meeting in 2021. I sent this in an email to the commission just recently. What this shows is that if you actually reached your harvest limit of 40 females, you would, it's reversed here. You run the risk of going below your 200 below harvest limit in 2023. So, you haven't for the past 7 years you have been below the harvest limit 30 or 20 or smaller number. So when he wrote his petition, he did not acknowledge having any harvest limits. He referenced the prairie unit, which is unlimited hunting, so there's no harvest limit. So this is not maintaining for a sustainable population in the Black Hills. My next point is, and I have another chart for you. I'm not going to pull that chart, that's too difficult. About the Forest Service assessment shows 24% of the area within the Black Hills National Forest boundaries as not Forest Service land, which would include Jewel Cave and Mount Rushmore, but most of that is private inholdings, which are spread all over the place in valleys and whatnot. Mountain lions have huge harvest range, home ranges and territories. So a mountain lion could walk onto private land and be shot. So you would be, in essence, allowing for privatization of hunting, because most people can only hunt on the public lands, but people who have access to a person who owns a ranch or a home could be invited by their friend to come shoot mountain lions 365 days of the year, and they could sell the opportunity to hunt on their property. So this is privatizing and creating an unfair advantage for people on private land to shoot mountain lions. And as was pointed out, statute allows you to shoot them whenever you want to. Is that the end? Am I out? So the other 30 seconds. Okay. The other thing is, there's lots of people, you know, who don't like mountain lion hunting. And to humor some of us, you have moved the season so as to not have the peak time when the cougars give birth. Cougars give birth, you know, all year round. And the peak is in June, July, August, September. And your research shows that some of them can survive at 6 months. But you want the hunting season to be happening in the winter, so there's a greater chance that more of the kittens when they're orphaned are 6 months or older, so they won't just die. So there's a humanitarian, okay, so am I out of my time?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so we are opposed to this. We think it's inconsistent with your mountain lion plan, and it should be dead on arrival. And one thing we keep suggesting, and I'm going over limit, Wyoming has 2/5 of the Black Hills. We have 3/5 of Black Hills. Their quota is 61 or 62. I can't quite remember. But they divide their area into 3 districts, and each district has its length of time and its part of their quota. So that's something to think about in July of 2023. All right, bye.
Thank you. With that, the next person I have signed up was Julie Anderson, but as Ms. Hilding indicated, she was having problems logging on. Ms. Anderson, were you able to log on or call in?
Yeah, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. 3 minutes is yours.
Okay. I oppose the petition of year-round mountain lion hunting on private land in the Black Hills. The reason stated by the petitioner is concern for visiting grandchildren. There has been no threat to any person other than the distance of sightings and the proximity stated was in general terms. Precautions need to be taken when living in a wildlife area, and unless all mountain lions are killed, there will always be a danger, however slight it may be. To allow killing of mountain lions 365 days on private land in the entire Black Hills for children who do not reside and only visit in the mentioned area is denying these animals gateways they need to cover their territory, migration in the case of males, and the right to exist. Also, this is a petition from one person, and there have been hundreds of people who have written to this commission who oppose mountain lion hunting. Therefore, to grant this petition and ignore the people in opposition to this is not in keeping with the will of the majority. Please deny this petition. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. The next individual I have signed up is Daryl Carter from Elk Point, South Dakota. Mr. Carter, are you online?
Oh, I'm right here. Oh.
Come on, step on up, sir, to the microphone next to Mr. Chris Hall.
Right here. All right. Well, the main thing I want to talk about was walking Elk Point, close by the Big Sioux, and it's just the jumping car, it's the worst I've ever seen on it, and they're getting to where they're actually a danger. And there used to be 1 in 3 pounders jumping in our boat, and now they're 8 and 12 pounders. And biggest one I've weighed is 21 pounds. And they just come shooting at you like a bull. Big Sioux is the worst, probably the worst river you got in South Dakota. And I guess I wanted to impress on everybody that how bad a problem that is, because I don't think too many people that gets taken into account. And I wanted to say, I think we should encourage people not to release them alive, because a lot of times I've seen ones with a deformed tail or something, he jumps in my boat. You know, these are 8 and 10 pounders. They're busting the hell out of my boat. They're strong fish. And you throw them back out, you go back through there a week later, here's that same fish back in my boat. So it's like, why? Why are we releasing them alive? And I know we can't ever get rid of them, but it does seem like if every time one jumped in somebody's boat, if we didn't release them alive, we could really make a difference on a river like the Big Sioux. That was the main thing I wanted to say. And
I was going to ask too, if you guys might consider a third rod permit, like Iowa and Kansas has. I think it's $14 extra a year. A lot of us fish alone. It'd be nice to have a third rod. So what do you guys think about the jumping carp? I mean,
I didn't know they were really big.
Oh, they're terrible. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I had a big knot on my arm that was the 21 pounder I weighed. And he never knocked my arm off with a tiller hand. So they're really, and I've gotten where I fish with safety glasses on. Or not fish, but when I'm in my boat and running, I put my safety glasses, because when they jump in, they're just, stuff's flying all over, bust your eyes up.
But Daryl, I live on the Vermilion. I'm from Vermilion, and I live on the Missouri River.
Okay. Yeah, the Big Sioux is worse than you live on the Vermilion?
No, I'm from Vermilion. I live on the Missouri River. But they're bad on the Missouri River, too.
They're bad, but they're not like the Big Sioux. And like some rivers, like I've been on the Illinois River, and it's a big, long, slow-moving river, and they're just all over in it. And the Big Sioux, most of the Big Sioux is kind of more of a rifle hole run kind of a deal. And in the summertime, they congest in small areas where it's slacker water, and they'll be up at the top, and you're constantly going through this same area. And all of a sudden, you got 6 or 8 10, 12-pound fish should beat that crap out of you. I guess my point, I just thought we should encourage people to not release fly.
Tom, do we do any mitigation stuff for Asian carp or consumer?
Tom Kirschman, Director of the Wildlife Division. I see we have a couple of our fish experts back here as well, and may ask them to jump in here as well. But certainly we've been looking at the Asian carp in South Dakota here. It's one of our aquatic invasive species, and it's one, honestly, that has gotten a whole lot, probably a whole lot less attention than other AIS species that we deal with on an annual basis. And we do know that they have expanded in multiple rivers. And
well, they've been in the Big Sioux for a long time. But
they have.
Yeah, they have.
But we are monitoring as they move into other waters and stuff. And yeah. Dave, I see you sitting back there. Anything that you can add in terms of mitigation measures and where we go into the future with this particular species?
At this point in time, there aren't any mitigation measures. To the fact that, yeah, they are bigger right now. These things, they don't reproduce. There's not equal amounts of reproduction every year. With the 2019 flood, there was a big pulse of fish produced. And so, anyways, we've got fish that have been growing for a couple of years now. They're those fish you're talking about.
They're big and they're strong.
They're big and they're strong, and they'll kind of run their course. I think if there was an easy way to reduce numbers, we would do that. Obviously, in Illinois, there is commercial fishing, and that is subsidized, and they still have pretty stealthy populations of these fish. So I'm afraid at this point in time, until we come up with a good solution or somebody comes up with a good solution, it's something we're going to have to live with. And you're just going to have to take precautions when you go up the river, because they do present a hazard.
I've never seen anything like what this year is like.
I can tell you they were really bad on the Lower James this year too. Just big fish and lots of them. So.
Yeah, well, like I said, I've seen it where, I threw one in that had a deformed tail. A week later, it was back in my boat, and it's like, why am I releasing them alive?
Well, you can certainly keep those fish. They're
good. Are you allowed to just kill them and throw them back in?
I think we have law enforcement. No, I think that would be a littering, wouldn't it?
What was that question?
Kill the fish and throw them back in.
Is that that
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Yeah. We would encourage you to just dump the fish back in without killing them or anything. Just
put the fish back into the body of water that it came from. It's akin to emptying the ocean with a bucket. Because they are downriver all the way to the mouth of the Missouri.
and they're downriver all the way to the mouth of the Mississippi, and so on and so forth. So by pulling one or two or even a dozen to 20, it's not going to make a difference.
If everybody that had one jump in the boat, you'd take thousands of dollars. You really wouldn't be 20, you'd be a thousand.
I understand.
Yep, I think that we've got to keep going with the farm. I know it's a long drive up here from Elk Point. Maybe Dave or Kip, you guys can get your contact information to this gentleman and we can discuss it further down there.
That third rod permit, I'd kind of like you to consider that. Like,
sure, we can have one of our guys.
Iowa does that and Kansas does it.
Yeah, you could submit a petition and ask for that change. One of our guys come out, get through how to do that as well. Thanks for coming. We appreciate your input.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I could also, Mr. Carter, get with fish staff again, because I know that the idea of the third rod permit has been brought up by another angler. Yes, sir. And so I do understand that fish staff are reviewing that. So if you want to stick around and I can either visit with you or actual staff.
I'll stick around. Yes.
With that, that's the only individuals I had signed up, and I understand that the petitioner for the mountain lion petition is online, but I would save him until the end. Right now, I'm going to go back to the open forum. If there's anyone else online other than the petitioner wishing to give testimony at the open forum, is there anyone else out there? Hearing none, Mr. Chair.